Well, thank you so much for having me come again this wonderful Sunday, warm summer moment. I truly appreciate the openness all of you here at the Unitarian Fellowships have for our circles of support and accountability and our core members. I am here to discuss community safety through offender reintegration into our community and how COSA South Saskatchewan volunteers are the strength of our structure. In 2010-11, Corrections Service Canada had up to 38,000 people incarcerated on any given day here in Canada. In Saskatchewan, that amounts to 11,700 people a day. That's a cost of $358,000 a day. The incarceration rate here in Saskatchewan has increased by 11%, which is the highest increase across all of Canada. These are the most current of our incarceration rates published at this moment. If incarceration continued to grow at the 11% over the next 5 years, it would cost our country over $500,000 a day to keep our correctional and provincial and federal correctional facilities going. The only way we as a community can assist in change is to assist those offenders that are out in our communities to live as successfully in our communities as possible. Offenders that have been deemed high risk often spend every day of their sentence behind bars. They often do not get a chance to start their reintegration prior to release into the community. This increases the stress of moving into a new community, having new supervisors as well, and in turn increases the risk of the offenders. Often offenders are already struggling with issues such as social isolation and marginalization, physical and or emotional abuse, poor or no employment, involvement with criminal activity at an early age, mental and physical disabilities, addictions problems, and skill deficits that include illiteracy, poor cognitive functioning, and lack of necessary life management skills. COSA South Saskatchewan is one of the first programs that has access to these offenders coming into our community when they leave our prisons. We are often the first type of program to provide any kind of support once they do come out. We are currently working with 13 core members, and by December of this year, that's going to increase to 17. We understand that moving into a new community with no social supports or bad influence social supports increases the risk of our offenders immensely. Community safety decreases when you have a high-risk offender present in your community. If these offenders are not properly supported and provided with healthy options, they often fall back into routines that have led them into offending. Often offenders do not want to reoffend after years within the correctional system. If they have no supports in the community, they often involve themselves in high-risk behaviors they are familiar with. This increases the chance of them victimizing our community again. By involving offenders in COSA, we increase their positive connections into our communities. We provide them with support from volunteers who live law-abiding lifestyles. This allows them to access other positive supports, such as addictions and mental health, that if they aren't being supervised by parole or probation, they wouldn't have access to. The volunteers often assist them in building skills such as interpersonal communications and relationship buildings, and it assists them involving themselves into other support groups such as Alcoholics Anonymous or spiritual groups. This now gives them a support system to help them through the tough times that we all take for granted. We all have family, friends, church groups, spiritual groups that we normally are involved with. So we try and build that for these fellows. Often fellows, sometimes there are ladies that are involved. When I approach individuals to volunteer with COSA, I look for people who have a value for others and understand that all people have challenges and barriers. The reason why I appreciate coming to the Unitarian Fellowship is that the principles that you all promote are all of the principles that we base our COSA circles on. The inherent worth and dignity of every person is the foundation of COSA as well. We believe that no matter the history of an offender, their willingness to be accountable allows them to be successful in a circle. Every volunteer that involves themselves in COSA has the same values for other people, which allows them to provide the community support so widely needed. COSA also aligns their work to provide assistance in community safety. By providing offenders with access to social support, assistance in skill building, and assistance in finding housing, employment, and health programming. We also reach out to community groups and agencies to build awareness on community safety and the importance of supported reintegration. Without the latter, the first is compromised. I am once again reaching out to the Unitarians for support. We have a number of core members that are coming into our communities unsupported in the next couple months. We are in need of volunteers who have a passion in working with marginalized individuals, are willing to assist in the offender's growth within our community, which in the end keeps our community safe. At the end of the day, our community being safe is what matters most. Community safety is directly impacted by the successful community reintegration. I feel that the Unitarian Fellowship has a great base of principles and members that the members hold. Not all of our offenders are looking for a religious connection, but a connection to people who feel people have worth and potential. So that's really all I have to say that's been prepared, but I welcome any and all questions, and I will answer them to the best of my knowledge and ability.
Seeing as I have a microphone,
okay.
I'm going to start off. And I'm just wondering how the federal government, with its emphasis on victim rights and building prisons, how supportive are they of COSA?
Actually, this is kind of surprising. They're very supportive. We have a memorandum of understanding through Correction Services Canada's Chaplaincy Division that states that they will continue to support us. We're allowed to go into their prisons to visit with fellows that are either already core members and are incarcerated due to a breach, wrong place, wrong time kind of thing, or to meet new people. We get all of our referrals from parole and probation. So through the federal and the provincial systems. It's all voluntary by the core members, but it's very supported by CSC. And I know with our current government, you would be really surprised to hear that. But I think the way they do it is we're under the community safety aspect. So they view us as being assistance of community safety. They don't necessarily look at us as supporting offenders or helping reintegration, but we're helping keep those people who would victimize our communities safe by providing them support. So we are very thankful that CSC does support us, and that MOU that we have with them is kind of a hard thing to just burn on paper, because it's solidified, and we have 18 COSA sites across Canada right now. So they'd have a heck of a lot of people to go through. And right now across Canada, we're working with 118 core members that have left prison and that are now getting social supports through us.
We're recording. That's why we want us, everyone, to use it. So I'll bring it over to you next. How's that? My understanding is that COSA is aimed at sexual offenders. And it just, is there any consideration of expansion of that mandate to, say, high-risk physical violence offenders?
Currently, we have been geared at the sexual offenders. Reason being, because they usually are the highest risk. However, in the last couple of months across Canada, we've been getting more referrals for people who have a dangerous offender designation or a violent offender designation. So not necessarily have they offended sexually throughout their history, but they do have very, very violent pasts. So we're starting to change our the way we talk about things. We're not always talking about sex offenders. They will always be one of our nine, like our top offenders because of their risk, but we are getting more and more dangerous offenders and violent offenders coming out into our communities. So we can't ignore that. So we aren't.
Yes, I was going to ask you, are you dealing essentially just with people that are on parole or have been completely discharged from there?
Well, we try and get to these fellows while they're on something like day parole. So they still have some of that access to the system services. But that's not always, that's not always what's going to happen. So the best part about COSA is that we can work with them when they're done all of their parole and probation conditions, or we can work with them when they're a long-term supervision order. We have some guys who have parole orders for up to 15, 20 years after they've left prison, and we usually try and work with them through that, because often when they are a long-term supervision order, they only have to report to the parole office once a week or to the RCMP once a week, so they're not accessing those services anymore. And in our community, services are so hard to find and the wait lists are so long that if we can at least provide some social support before that and help them with their understanding of accountability and some of their issues that they may need really intense help with through mental health or those kinds of things, at least we can be somebody positive in their life until they're able to access some of that stuff, or if they no longer do access that stuff.
I just thought it might be a good idea if, Amanda, you just sort of briefly say how a circle works, you know, the meeting once a week and so forth, because some of us know it, but most of us don't, I don't. Mm-hmm. So just to say that quickly.
So what happens with the whole procedure of working with these offenders is I would meet them initially, make sure that they are in our target, make sure that they understand that this isn't a group that's just going to support them through anything. They have to be accountable for their actions. They also have to sign what we call a covenant when we get a circle started. And that covenant shows that they will stay law-abiding, they will not breach their conditions, and if there's something going on that they're hiding from us, like say, a good example is one of our core members stopped coming to his circle meetings, and they do meet once a week, and he would chalk it up to being, oh, I'm really busy with work. Well, I had probation call me and say, how often has he been meeting? And I said, well, you know, the last 2 weeks he's missed. Well, that was enough for the circle to say something's going on here, and we didn't know what it was. So we came together as a circle and talked about that, and here he was feeling an increase of stress with work, and he was starting to hang out in places he wasn't supposed to. He hadn't victimized anyone. He hadn't started his addiction pattern yet, but he was going into that circle. So that's when probation and ourselves got together and said, like, you can't do this. You're going to hurt yourself. You're going to hurt someone else. And he is now incarcerated right now in a breach. But we have 3 to 5 volunteers that'll meet on a weekly basis with these folks. And part of their agreement in the covenant is that they will be there once a week. If something comes up, a holiday or what have you, they talk about that as a group. If something comes up in the group, everybody shares. It's an agreement to be friends. And this is what a friend provides another friend. And, I mean, it looks different for everyone. What I might share to a core member, you might not share, or you might share more than I will share, and that's okay, and those limits are involved, and the offenders know that. The offenders know that we're not going to have them at our house for supper and those kinds of things. We do have volunteers that do have them for supper, but that's, you know, their prerogative, but we never ask of those things from our volunteers either. So they'll meet once a year, they celebrate their, you know, year out of jail, 2 years out of jail, 3 years out of jail, their birthdays, anything like that, and it does, we have our core remember saying that they finally have a family again, and they do feel that these people are their family. It's quite remarkable, the relationships that they bring together.
I just wanted to add that my understanding that a lot of times we meet in Tim Hortons or something like that, that, you know, that where do we meet is, you know, and meet for coffee, and it's a friendly gathering.
Mm-hmm. That's correct. Everybody usually meets in public for the first little while, and we have some volunteers that do like to open up their homes for coffee for their circles, but a lot of times our circles are out in a coffee shop somewhere. Just, I mean, it's the accountability piece of it too, right? If you're scared to meet with a group in public, what are you scared of? What are you keeping? So, I mean, when we have guys say, well, I don't want to do that, and I only want them to come to my house, then that's a red flag for me, and I don't want to involve community volunteers in that, because that's not community safety.
Just
interested in the profile of the people that you're serving. And just for an example, can you give us some idea as to what proportion would be either subject to a Part 24 order or who might be flagged for Crown action in that area?
Right now, the average age between our offenders that we're working with is, I believe, 49. So we're talking about fellows who have been in and out of the system often since they were young teens and have served quite long sentences. The average sentence with our guys is about 10 years. We have some fellows who have served 30, 40 years, so they're in their late 60s, 70s coming out. Demographically, it's males between the ages of about 42 and 72, I'd say our oldest core member is. And we have a 30% Aboriginal rate. So 30% of our core members are Aboriginal. As for the PAR 24 you're talking about, I've never involved that.
Is subject to a long-term offender designation or flagged under the national flagging system as subject to an application?
All of our guys that have a sexual offense in their history are all on our national sexual offender list.
Subject to SOAR orders.
Yeah, and we do have, I'm thinking right now, it's 15% that are long-term supervision orders or life orders, so meaning they'll be subject to supervision by the federal government for that many years. Often they serve such long sentences that when they do get out, they will go on to a long-term supervision order or a life, or else they'll come to what's called an 810, which is a provincial order saying that the local community's police have wanted them to be supervised longer.
A question I had was, what did you, if our community were to become part of this, what is the training that you have, and what is the number of volunteers that you need, things like that?
Right now, we have a need for about 5 volunteers over the next 6 months. And we often go talk to the university and stuff like that, too. So I wouldn't expect everybody to sign up. And we have a 3 to 4 hour volunteer training program that we start with. And that goes through understanding the background of the offenders, the types of behaviors that we see from high-risk offenders to be able to make sure that everybody feels safe. Because we don't want anybody to sit down at a table without understanding that often high-risk offenders have been manipulative over the years. So we do spend a lot of time on volunteering with or training with that, and we do training once every 6 months on other topics too, and that's about 3 to 4 hours every 6 months, and that usually focuses on addiction, mental health, brain-acquired injuries. We have a couple core members that have brain-acquired injuries, so that's been a need for our volunteers to understand what that looks like. All of our offenders are different, so everybody behaves differently. So we do often meet with circles and do individual training with that circle based on that core member. Every volunteer, depending on what core member they're with, will always understand what their conditions are, what their history of offending was, what has gotten them into that place of offending. And I often share that with the volunteers first, and then we have the circle come together and we have the offender talk about his past too. That's part of the accountability. He has to be able to sit down, or she, sorry, and say that this is what I have done. And if they can't do that, they can't be accountable. And so we do a lot of training with our volunteers. The requirements of a volunteer is we usually ask them to be able to have an hour a week free for the core member, and we try and have them commit for a year. The reason why we have them commit for a year is we want to be able to sustain that relationship. If we have new volunteers on the circle every 6 months, the accountability piece on the volunteers doesn't work, and you don't build that trust and relationship. And we're working with guys who don't have trust. They don't trust anyone as far as they can throw them. They're used to working in a system where nobody cares for them and nobody trusts them, and they don't have trust for others either. So we really work on that in the volunteer training as well. Our board chair has been involved with COSA. He started it here in Saskatchewan in the early 90s, so he does a lot of the volunteer training with me, and he's got a wealth of information. We have university profs that will assist us, and we reach out to the community mental health addiction services and bring in speakers as needed too if we want to implement those into our training. And so we always, if a volunteer ever felt insecure, then obviously that's not a good circle for them, and that's okay too. When we bring a circle together, everybody meets, gets to, you know, have that conversation. And if you don't feel safe in that circle, we're not going to put you there. And the volunteer and the core members know that if a volunteer doesn't feel safe, or the core member doesn't like the volunteer for some reason, maybe it reminds him of his abusive father or what have you, we won't put those dynamics together. So we're very thorough in how we build these circles so that there isn't the chance of manipulation either. If we have somebody who has been highly manipulative, we put very strong people on his circle so that we make sure that those chances aren't there.
Does this facility exist in all the provinces?
Yes, right from coast to coast. We don't have anything in the territories right now, but however, a lot of our fellows who are incarcerated from Inuvit, Yukon and Northwest Territories are actually being incarcerated here in Saskatchewan and Manitoba. So they're coming into Regina. We actually have a fellow that is from Cambridge Bay. And so that's a big dynamic for him. But yes, we have 18 COSAs right across from coast to coast, right to Nova Scotia to BC.
And I just wanted to add, if you look up COSA on the internet, you will see that COSA is very active in Europe, in France, in Ukraine, and so forth. So mm-hmm. It's not just a small group.
We've also got pilot programs that have been starting down in Pennsylvania. The coordinators have been coming up to Canada for training. And Dr. Robin Wilson is a psychologist that used to work with CSC Canada here, who now has his own practice in Florida. He specializes in sexual offending and high-risk offenders, and he comes up once a year and trains all of the COSA coordinators and volunteers with different tools that we use throughout every day. And we also have a national consultant that we can talk to every day. He's a psychologist as well, and he works with men with sexuality issues in Vancouver, and so he's at the tip of our fingers all the time. If there's something that just isn't right, we often call him up and ask him what is our next move or how do we best deal with things, and he'll even come out to Saskatchewan and work with volunteers as needed as well. So we're really lucky we have that support.
I have two questions.
Yeah.
One of them is, what percentage of volunteers are male? I'm assuming with a male population, it would be better to have male supports. And the second question is, in terms of your volunteer requirements, are you looking for individuals or are you looking for people representing an agency?
You would think that having male support would be primarily what we have. Right now, it's about a 50-50 mix. The reason why we try and have female volunteers, and we choose volunteers of, and not often do we choose, we usually have people approach us, but we appreciate having volunteers of all different age sets. Reason being is that if we have an offender who has offended against young women, we often do put an older woman on his circle because his understanding of relationships with women is obviously skewed. So understanding that he can have coffee and a relationship as a friend with a female is very important for his success in our community. We had a fellow who was involved with COSA for a few years and continues to be, that when he would go to, say, Tim Hortons, when the server would smile at him, he assumed she was hitting on him. because he did not know any different. He honestly assumed that that's what she was doing. So it actually took the female volunteers of his circle to say, I smile at you. I'm not hitting on you. I appreciate you as a person and we're friends. So those relationship skills are built in these circles to say, you know, well, this is her job. She's there to be pleasant and polite to you. She's not there looking for anything else. So it is very important to have volunteers of all walks of life, ages. We usually keep our volunteers as at least 20 years old and older. And our average age of our volunteers right now is 52, and it is 50-50. We have a lot of couples that come together. And as for volunteers, I mean, we do need some individual bodies if people are willing. And the other part of, like you ask, an agency, we have a steering committee that meets once a month. And in that steering committee, we have stakeholders from the community. We have police, probation, parole, mental health, Saskatchewan Justice, somebody from the university. We have somebody from the Mennonite Church, somebody from the Archdiocese Catholic Division here, somebody from the Lutheran Church, United Church. And the reason why we have this steering committee is we sit down and we go over what's going on in all of the core members' worlds. And we make sure as a group that we feel that the community safety aspect is met and that everything that's going on in these offenders' lives is appropriate. And it's also a sharing table if they are involved with probation or parole, or if the police know something that we don't. It can be brought up and said, like, you know, so-and-so's been spotted so in this place. And that's when the circles will have to, you know, diminish and say, like, we can't continue until this is dealt with by the courts, if that's the factor. But once a month, we come together, we discuss what's going on. If something has been a concern by a volunteer, this is the place where we sit down and ask everybody else around the table, how do you think we need to deal with this? Do we need to take more action through probation or parole or the police? So it's always good to have an agency represent that has some social justice desires, because they're the community. I mean, probation, parole, police all have their mandates and do what they do because that's their job. If we don't have community members around the table to say, well, we don't feel safe with this, or we don't think that's appropriate, that's a voice lost. We don't have victims often in our cases. The community's the voice of those victims.
You sort of addressed what I'm going to ask already in talking about the person who, in the coffee shop, who was feeling like he was being hit on. But I'm curious to hear success stories about sort of things that have worked.
Okay. Well, right now, we have worked with 25 core members since COSA started in Saskatchewan, and I sadly report we've had one sexually reoffend. So one out of 25 has offended. So our success rate here in South Saskatchewan is, I believe, 95%. So I'm proud to say that, but it is sad to say that we did have a fellow sexually reoffend.
I suppose what I'm interested in hearing is what kind of the little interactions like you described, that sort of really concrete stuff.
Yeah.
What makes a difference?
Yeah. One of our fellows, he's been involved with our circles for he was our first circle back in 1992, and he is a fellow who has low cognitive functioning and comes from a family whose cognitive functioning is even lower than his. So he is the highest functioning person in his family, and he lives with his family. So his norm is that, but he continues to come to circle every week because these are the people that when his taps are broken, his windows aren't working, they're the ones that say, well, have you called the rentals man? Have you called your landlord? And those are the things that he doesn't quite think of. When he came back out into the community, he wanted to be involved with a church group. That's all he wanted. He wanted to go to church. He had a really good connection with the chaplain in the prison, and he wanted to continue that. So he came into the church, and everybody in the church knew his conditions. They knew that he wasn't allowed to be around children. They knew that they had to have church, obviously in separate spots in the church than where the children were, and he was only allowed to be at church if he had two of his circle members there with him, because they were approved by parole to be with him if by chance there was children somewhere. So things went really well for him for quite a while. He was doing really well. His mom, for some reason, decided that she didn't appreciate the type of church he was going to. She wanted to go to a different denomination. So she changes the whole world, takes him to a new church. Well, his circle went to the church and said to the minister, these are his conditions, he cannot be around children. So that minister, okay, not a problem. I'll pick him up for church. He'll sit in the front pew. Everything will be just fine. Everything was just fine until a new minister came around. They picked him up on the Sunday school bus. So he didn't offend. He never has offended since 1992, but he wasn't where he was supposed to be. And with his cognitive functioning, he said to the minister, I'm not supposed to be around children. But the new minister said, well, it's fine, I'm here. That fellow wasn't approved by parole to be with him in case children were. So this fellow was breached and went back to church, or went back to jail for 2 years. Yeah, came back out, went back to the church he wanted to go to, has continued to go to that church since, and has kept his circle since. His mom, his life is always like this, with his mom not having a lot of cognitive ability. They lost their personal owned home this year, and his circle was the one that, with myself, that we all went to Carmichael Outreach and said, like, these guys are homeless in 2 days. The mom has known since September, but hasn't told us. So every little change in this person's world can cause him to cycle down. But thankfully, with his circle, he's been able to keep his normalcy in his world. And he said to me the other night, we had a barbecue with the core members, and he said, I've known these people for 25 years, and if I hadn't known them for 25 years, I wouldn't be in my community for 25 years. And our national consultant keeps telling me, he's been in a circle too long, he needs to be let go. And there's no way in heck I would ever say, please go, you need to go. He doesn't have the ability. He doesn't have the stability of any sort. So his circle is his family. He is 56 now. So he was offending when he was quite young. I believe in his early 20s, 21, 22. Yeah. He spent a lot of time in jail.
I just was wondering, like, the makeup of one circle. Is it one core member and a support, or is there more than one core member?
There is one core member and 3 to 5 community volunteers. Depending on that person's ability to handle social support, some people have been so isolated for so long that having 5 volunteers around the table to have coffee with is way too much. 3 is just enough. We did try at one point in time to have 2 core members to a circle, but the core members didn't get along at all. Like, they honestly, they were so much alike that they hated each other. So it didn't work. Like, exactly. They'd come to coffee and it just would end up being, they'd end up sitting at separate tables anyways. So we just made separate circles for them. Yeah, it didn't work very well. We have found in Calgary, they have utilized some of their high-functioning core members who have gone through all of their probation, have done really well without supervision and with their circle for many years. They've used them as mentors on circles to get circle started, and we've got so many new circles, we haven't been able to do that lately, but we do have a fellow who's coming off his parole here soon that he is gung-ho to add another core member to his circle so that he can be positive for him. And I think it would work for him, but it's very hard to figure out who it would work for, because you get 2 people that are so alike, it just doesn't work.
I'll speak last.
Same question about success. You know, when you've had a flop, how do you really measure your complete successes when they don't come to the circle anymore, or when they can manage on their own? And of course, your motto was healing rather than punishment. So how do you know when you've got a complete success?
Well, we actually, I have a an example. We had a fellow who was involved with a circle for 2 years, was doing really well. He was a very high functioning fellow. You know, he had had a, he had a doctorate degree. So he had the ability to be very functional in our community. After 2 years, he had decided that he was going to move. He wanted to practice his career again. So he moved to South Africa. He got a hold of some volunteers this summer. He is now married. He has a child on the way. He is successful in his practice. And life for him has gone completely from one aspect to the next. And he's actually talking over there to other officials about, you know, how circles worked for him. And he still does reach out and goes to addiction services programming while he's there, because he knows that that was an issue in his life, and mental health issue or mental health programming. So he's kept a real good tie with those. So I would say he's one of our greatest successes, because he has moved on and been able to reintegrate into a family, have a family, and those were things he never had when he was here. So we don't always see such huge success like that, but keeping yourself out of jail for 5 years is very successful. Getting a job for some of our guys that have such limitations is a success. Finding a home and keeping it for more than 4 months can be very successful. So for every core member, we measure success differently. Right now, all of the 18 COSAs throughout Canada are going through a national evaluation. So we've had researchers and evaluators down here talking to our core members, our volunteers. So when that is complete, it'll be really interesting to see how they measure our success as well.
I don't quite know how to put this, but are there any statistics or analysis of causality for these problems? Like, is FAS or any other thing?
You know, when we look at present? When we look at all of our core members, I would say, when I've looked at all of their files, 90% of them have been physically and sexually abused as children. Probably 75% have had addictions problems. And I'd say at least 95 of them have a mental health issue, whether it's depression, schizophrenia. Like, we've had people who have had sociopathic tendencies. So there's those three that are very prominent. And then I would, more often in our First Nation core members, the FASD comes in. And we do have a few that have brain-acquired injuries as well. So almost all of them have an addiction problem, a mental health problem, have been abused as a child. If not, all of them have all of it. Like, it really depends on the dynamics of the core members going on, but they either have one of three or all of three.
You said that there is about 30% are Aboriginal, but the prison system has a high percentage of Aboriginal. So I'm just wondering why the difference between the two.
I think the difference between the two is, you know, that's a really hard question to answer, because it is. The Aboriginal incarceration rate is huge. The referral process for our guys, we have a lot of Aboriginal fellows who at first are like, I don't think this is for me. I don't think I want to divulge that. I don't want to be on, you know, I don't want to talk about my past and those kinds of things. And I think because a lot of their culture is to close doors, especially when it comes to the sexual abuse. Not always have they been charged with sexual abuse, so sometimes they aren't categorized as high risk as other offenders. Not saying they aren't, they just don't get quite as high of risk designation. Right now we're working with two core members who are actually on First Nations reserves and trying to get their local community members to assist on their circles is like pulling teeth. They'll say, yes, you know, we're happy to have them back as long as they keep their nose clean, follow their conditions. And the band will say, you know, we want them to be involved in some sweats. We want them to connect to an elder. And we're really gung-ho for this, and we appreciate that they've come back to the community. But as soon as you ask them to be involved in their circle to provide that support, oh, that's a great idea, and then nobody shows up. And one of the greatest challenges one of the core members is having is he'll go to the grocery store and everybody will say, it's so nice to see you. I'm so happy you're back. I'm glad you're doing well. Let's go for a coffee. He'll go to the coffee shop. Nobody will sit with him. So it's, I think, awareness needs to be made. And we've been trying to do that. We've been connecting with other agencies throughout the city, Prairie Spirit Community or Connections, with justice coordinators on Yorkton Tribal Council, File Hills Tribal Council, on the First Nations communities as well. And it's a great idea. Everybody loves the idea, but it's really hard to get them involved. And I think the reason why it's so hard to get them involved is not only do they not want to talk about it, but they've got so many offenders reintegrating to their communities that are backgrounds with gangs, lots of violence, that their justice coordinators are so busy with those folks that when it comes to the few that we have, like, I mean, we don't work with a vast number of guys. We couldn't. The way we do things, it just wouldn't work. They're more concerned about the guys who are going to be breaking into houses, stealing the cars, damaging their reserves, the ones with bringing the drugs into their reserves, which is really sad, but we're trying. And we're trying to get more referrals of Aboriginal folks because we know they're out there.
Well, I've taken the microphone because I'm allowing myself the last word. First of all, I have two things I want to share. I was a member of a circle for nearly 2 years, and I remember the first time that I went, I thought, my God, I'm going to sit and have coffee with a convicted sex offender. How am I going to feel? Well, you know what? I sat there with a group of friends having coffee. I didn't feel whatever I was supposed to feel, and it was what I thought I'd feel. It was a very rewarding experience, and I looked forward to the weekly meetings. And I felt I was doing something that was worthwhile, but I enjoyed what I was doing. So think about it. The other thing, and this is food for thought for the Social Justice Committee particularly, is that I used to sit on that monthly group, the steering committee. It was tentative. We were wondering what we were going to do about it. I was unofficially representing the fellowship. And I felt that it was very important for us to have a voice on that committee. Unfortunately, at a meeting, it was not selected as a priority, so I wasn't representing anybody, and I had to leave that steering committee. And I think that that's really unfortunate that we as a fellowship do not have a voice on that committee, because the other church groups do, and you know, you listed all that. Anyway, food for thought. But you know, what can I say? Amanda, I think you're wonderful, and I think the community is so lucky to have you. Last year when you came, you were just fabulous, and I was looking forward, and you know, thank you so
thank
much.
You. Thank you.
I think we're very, very lucky to have somebody like this working with us.
Thank you.